Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the movie podcast where two films with something in common go head to head to figure out which one did it better. On this week's show, in the red corner, Kathleen Turner plays a lonely romance novelist who embarks on an adventure where she falls in love with a man she initially can't stand in Romancing the Stone. While in the blue corner, Sandra Bullock plays a lonely romance novelist who embarks on an adventure where she falls in love with a man she initially can't stand in The Lost City.
This jungle dump. I'm fed up to here with this treasure hunt business. Yeah. Ira, you miserable worm, you lied to me. You said she was a city girl. Out of her element. Just get her in the map and bring him back. Piece of cake. Piece of cake, my butt. There's nothing you can say that'll make me go back into that hellhole. Don't bring that up, Ira. Ira, stop it. All right, I'll go back. But this time,
you're coming with me.
Don't panic.
What do you mean, don't panic?
Just don't panic.
No, don't stop saying panic.
Hey,
I'm panicking now.
You have something on your back.
Ah, no!
Stop screaming.
What is that?
Stop screaming.
What is that?
Stop screaming.
Do you have any on you?
No.
Why don't you have any on you?
Maybe the jumpsuit scared him off. I don't know.
Get him off.
Oh, my God.
Get him off.
No, I can't touch this blood-gorged mucus sac. Can you fling it? Can you? Why don't
get
you
it.
Just pick it and fling it? Just pick it and
you
fling
pick it.
It
and fling it.
Can you spin
please
it off?
Please get it. Get it off. I don't like touching
okay,
it.
Okay.
I don't. I'm feeling faint. They're sucking
okay,
it
okay,
off.
Okay.
They're sucking my soul out.
Okay. Stop.
So which film wins? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And as I'm speaking, you've probably figured out that Alex is away this week. But what really matters is that our MIA host is back. So, Vicky, how was 3 weeks away from this nonsense?
It was, it was hard to be away. Obviously, I love doing this, but it was also nice to be on a beach doing nothing.
Were you listening to Clash of the Titles?
I've got to be honest, no.
Not at all?
No, not at all. I'm really sorry.
I feel like we got one message that sounded like you'd heard something or
really?
You knew something. Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, you were asking about the guests and I felt it was based
on
what
we
said.
Oh, no, God, yes, sorry. Yeah, that was me. I had a dream. I know dreams are boring, but I had a dream. So it must come from a place of anxiety / jealousy / fear of missing out. I thought you had Zac Efron as the guest. And I was really pleased for you because that's a big booking.
It's a big get.
Yeah, it's a really big get.
I've met him. He's not that funny.
But I was also really pissed off, obviously, as you can imagine.
Sure.
Because in the dream, I was like, oh, brilliant. So when I go,
yeah, they get,
Zac Efron's
they get,
in the big
get Efron.
Yeah.
No, Zac was busy, so yeah. We got the next best thing.
Yeah, and which I then figured out was Dave Berry.
Yes.
Which is brilliant, obviously.
Yeah. Sorry you missed him. He was on good form.
I bet he was.
He was very happy to join us for two films he actually liked.
Yeah, he liked Tango and Cash, didn't he?
He did like Tango and Cash, to be fair. Yeah, at least he finished both films this week, last week. But yeah, no, we've missed you.
Thank you.
And you picked these films this week.
I did pick them, even though you kind of ignored me on the message,
yeah,
which is fine.
Yeah, I didn't want to do action films after action films. I just forgot to respond.
Just say no. You can't just ignore me. You can't just ghost me.
I thought it would go away.
Yeah, exactly. And wasn't I kind, though, when I was like, oh, you've just ignored me for 3 weeks. I was like, was there something else you wanted? And I wasn't being passive aggressive. I was like, okay, if it's a bad choice.
Why have you picked these films?
Well, because, obviously, so The Lost City, you know, you had me at Sandra, obviously. If you're going to throw in Channing Tatum being funny, and Radcliffe, actually, being all like sort of campy supervillain, and Brad Pitt, you know, like you've said to me before, you've got to worry when Netflix starts using an algorithm to script content. If this is the kind of thing it spits out, because this was like made by design for people like me, like it's like an algorithm has put this film together. Mm. And Romancing the Stone, I just have a very fond family memory of watching it. Although when I watched it in the week, I was like, oh, maybe I was thinking of Jewel in the Nile. So I didn't want to tell you that. That's the sort of thing that makes you really mad.
No,
I love Romancing the Stone, but the specific memory I have of the whole family enjoying this film when I was very young, I think was the Jewel in the Nile. Now,
Jewel in the Nile is terrible.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's borderline unwatchable.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's really bad.
So maybe it was this then.
Maybe
Hooray!
It was this.
So
or maybe your family had bad taste. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So clue wise, Alex said, I think he said Love Books was the clue.
Right.
Which
yeah.
at the time I was like, And then in the pub, I said, people, that's just a romantic adaptations we're going to get guesses. He goes, no, it's perfect clue.
Right.
Obviously not a single correct guess came in based on Love Books. I think you need to say he was being meta with it somehow.
Yeah.
But so I felt that I needed to get more specific with my clue on Twitter. So I wrote inappropriate jungle attire.
Yes.
That was my clue. That was maybe too specific.
Right.
As everyone then got it.
But I like it when everyone gets it.
Mm. First correct answer, I think, because I wasn't paying attention because that was Alex's job until he's pulled out.
Yeah.
Andrew Logan.
Great.
Your prize is a copy of the romance novel I'm working on about two guys and a girl who start a podcast, then promptly fall in love. It's called The Passion of the Pod.
That's nice. I don't know. I mean, you know, I know people in thruples, but I don't know how it actually works in reality.
No,
so,
but we're going to find out.
Do you know what? If we're going to find out, awesome.
Yeah, that's the ending
of
my book.
Another life goal ticked off the bucket list. Sorry, Mark. Maybe he can get involved. A menage a quatre. How fun.
Fun. I was going to make a bucket joke then, but I won't. excuse me. The connection section.
Oh, man, there's a lot.
Yeah, I've got like four. So do you want to do all yours? I'm sure you've got mine.
All right, so...
Or do the good one.
All right, the opening of your book is made real at the opening of your film.
Sure.
You've got the wrong shoes for the jungle.
Yep.
You're a reclusive / anxious writer.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny cars.
Mm.
Let's have a dance.
Mm-hmm.
That's as much as I've got.
Getting in the wrong vehicle. Incorrect bus / not your cab.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah. I mean, as I said, lonely women living alone, aren't they?
They are living alone.
Mm.
Yeah. I would tell you what's interesting, but we'll get into it, is like that trope of like reclusive writer, reclusive and sort of the shut-in and a woman who's a bit of a mess. I think Romancing the Stone, the distance travel between what it looks like in Romancing the Stone and where we end up with in The Lost City is very interesting to me. Mm. We shall come back to it.
We shall. Because on Thursday, Vicky is taking us to The Lost City. Meaning today, I'm letting Danny DeVito do my introduction via a teaser trailer in which he explains the plot in character.
Brilliant.
Then at the end, breaks the fourth wall and talks to us.
Okay.
Ira, you miserable worm, you lied to me. You said she was a city girl, out of her element. Just get her in the map and bring him back. Piece of cake, my butt. What went wrong? I'll tell you what went wrong. First of all, guess who else is here? You're dead right, Solo.
What?
Secondly, she's got herself a partner who likes shooting holes in everything. There's nothing you can say that'll make me go back into that hellhole. Don't bring that up, Ira. Ira, stop it! All right, I'll go back. But this time,
you're coming with me.
That's so odd.
That's him talking to you.
So it's because, I don't know, like his character in this is possibly extraneous, I would say.
Sure. A star-making role for the gentleman, though. I mean, he was on telly and Taxi, but the fact that by the time they were promoting this in cinemas, he was what they were using.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
True.
Because he was just cast, and we'll get to it, but as Michael Douglas's mate. So that really shocks. And the trailer for Jewel of the Nile, it makes more sense because this turned him into such a huge star.
Yeah.
He was one of the biggest box office stars of the 80s yeah. off the back of this. But this film, I'm quite surprised he's not a huge part of this
no.
film.
Agreed.
I mean, he makes the most of his time on screen.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about some behind the scenes on this one because it's quite a good story for once. Diane Thomas is who we're going to talk about the most. She wrote the script in 1978, 2 years before Raiders of the Lost Ark was written. Something I did not know, having spent my whole life thinking it was a Raiders of the Lost Ark ripoff. But yeah, she wanted to combine comedy, action and romance. She was working at a restaurant called Alice's at the time. A friend of hers, agent, submitted it to Michael Douglas, who was as well known as a producer as he was as an actor then, and he loved it. He went up to the restaurant and he said he thought she was like Joan Wilder when he met her. He said she was attractive, blonde, shy, but she had a real need for fantasy and adventure, and they hit it off. A bidding situation occurred and Douglas was willing to pay. He said, I don't care if it was the first time or the 10th time someone had written a script. If the material is good, then the material has its own value. And so she got played $250,000 for
lovely
this
stuff. It's stuff, the fairy tale.
It's a dream yeah. come true. It's a dream. I mean, it goes horribly wrong soon.
It does, yeah.
In terms of the script, other writers came in and reworked the script, and then a test screening fizzled out. It was a real flop, and so she was brought back to inject what Michael Douglas calls her charm and spirit, and to add some specific scenes, which I'll flag when we get to the movie. But we're going to talk about her for a minute, because the dream really was real, because the next thing she did off the back of Romancing the Stone was write three scripts for Steven Spielberg. One of them was called Blonde Hurricane, which was an adaptation of a Hungarian novel, which sounded really interesting. Similar, I would say, to Romancing the Stone. It was sort of a mystery action about this cool woman, the Blonde Hurricane of the title, who gets into scrapes and solves crimes. That one never happened. She wrote Always for him, which did get made 5-6 years later, not her version of the script. But she also wrote an Indiana Jones movie, which I think some of what she wrote might end up in the new film
the
next
new
year, because I've read an Indiana Jones script that has a sort of ghostly castle section in it. And her one was apparently a haunted house, Indiana Jones. So I wouldn't be surprised. And I've written about this. I think that the opening sequence of the new Indiana Jones might be that castle sequence from this old script. So she did three films for Spielberg. She was about to write a script about a girl who has the secret of the Philosopher's Stone.
Cool.
So I don't know what that was predating. But sadly, she never got to make that. A friend of hers said her scripts were about men whom she could and would have loved if only she could meet them. And she wrote that as part of an obituary she wrote for Diane Thomas, because Michael Douglas says, the last time I saw Diane was when I went out to the parking lot and showed her the Porsche that I got her. He bought her that Porsche because she didn't write Jewel of the Nile, but it was a disaster, the script. Kathleen Turner hated it, and so she spent a weekend rewriting Jewel of the Nile. And in exchange, he gave her that Porsche, which she then died in.
It's horrendous.
2 months later, her boyfriend was driving it. I think he might have had a drink or two. And yeah, a passenger died, she died. And
yeah, he was just over the limit, apparently. It's awful. It's absolutely awful.
Yeah, they decided not to pursue him, the police. Yeah. They sort of gave up on it. But yeah, just a real tragedy, because I don't know, all the amazing films and scripts we could have got off the back of it, because I'm sure we'll get into this. But it's I guess what sets this apart, which I didn't understand when I was a kid, is the fact that it's a feminist piece. You know, the first half it might not be, but the second half it definitely is.
I mean, I don't think it's not. I think some of the jokes that Jack makes have not aged brilliantly, but they wouldn't. It's an old film, so... But he isn't supposed to be the person of Joan's dreams, is he? He's supposed to be actually a bit brash and a bit of a dick. So that's fine. So that works. And she sort of accepts some things that he says, that if you wrote it now, your heroine wouldn't. But that's, you know, that's the progress.
And as I said, she was taken off this script. You do wonder what stuff was added by the other writers, or some of the visual stuff as well, which I'm going to talk about later, that I feel like maybe the men making the movie might have stuck in there.
Yeah.
When it's not... It doesn't feel like that's the point that Diane Thomas was trying to make. This was about a woman's fantasy, not a man's fantasy. And yet the woman is objectified in this film rather than the man.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm thinking maybe she didn't put that in.
Yeah.
But who knows? Anyway, it was set up at Columbia. They got cold feet. And then Sherry Lansing became the first female studio chief at Fox. And she's the woman who picked it up to make it. She then resigned before they started making it. But the point remains, the first female studio boss is the one who bought this. And then there's some interesting stuff with Robert Zemeckis, who he had befriended Spielberg when he was a student. Spielberg saw something in him, produced his first two films, I Want to Hold Your Hand and Used Cars. Both big flops. I'll add, both really good movies.
Right.
But they didn't make any money. And so the next thing Zemeckis did was write the script for 1941, Steven Spielberg's first flop.
Some people get a lot of chances.
Well, it was all Spielberg, though. And Spielberg said, I want to help you set up your next film.
Yeah, I'm being mean there, but when I was watching Romancing the Stone, obviously what Robert Zemeckis goes on to become, it is interesting when you see it at the start. And it isn't as polished as later work. Of course it isn't. But people just don't get those many chances these days. So it's like some of it is a little less smooth than you might like. And that could be changing taste and changing attention spans. But just some of it does seem a bit cheap and a little bit clunky, which is part of its charm. But obviously he goes on to do like such like monumental stuff. But I think in today's system, he would never get that far. I think you'd just get canned.
Well, it's interesting because he doesn't actually keep getting chances. But what the next step here was, Spielberg said, let me set up your next one. Back to the Future sounds great. Let's make that. And to be fair, Zemeckis said no. He said, the optics are bad on this. I can't keep working for you and keep messing up. It's making me look like an idiot. And it's gonna affect your career as well as it's as bad
as... drag us both down.
Yeah, and so he walked away and started work on Cocoon.
Yeah.
Which he spent 2 years developing Cocoon. And then at the same time he's working on that, Michael Douglas loves both of these films that Zemeckis has made. As I said, they are good films, but it was a long shot as producer. But Zemeckis says, Michael came to me. Michael was always a champion of mine. He really kept saying to the studio, I want the energy that's in Used Cars to be in this movie. There's a sort of feeling that we were all on a mission. And so Zemeckis, his career was over at 23. Then at 28, he was given this second chance by Michael Douglas. So casting. Michael Douglas did not want to cast Michael Douglas. As he said, in those days, there was a tremendous amount of separation between television acting and film acting. I wanted to try and get the part, but it was very difficult because he just wasn't bankable. He'd done these thrillers where he wasn't the lead. He'd been in a TV series and you didn't really make that crossover. So it's funny that him and DeVito made the crossover in this film. And so he wanted a box office name for his movie. So the original cast they were after was Clint Eastwood and Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah, definitely.
100%. That didn't work out. Jack Nicholson was in the mix. Burt Reynolds was bandied about to play the character. Sylvester Stallone and Christopher Reeve. Apparently, everyone in town turned it down, and so Douglas was forced to hire himself. But I think it's an interesting moment in his career because he'd played good guys up until this point. This is the first time you're seeing this dark side.
Yeah.
Where that's what he spends the rest of the 80s doing. Yeah. He's the asshole that for some reason we all like.
And he looks like he's enjoying himself. Like, he doesn't look like, I wish I was not in this.
Yeah, agreed. Deborah Winger was who they wanted to play Joan. Douglas says, this is an interesting quote, she was doing terms of endearment in Texas and we did stop to see her. We couldn't get a direct answer whether she was committed or not, and we had concerns after being down to Mexico with Bob on locations and seeing how difficult it was going to be. We were going to need somebody who was a total team player.
Yeah.
There's famous stories about Deborah Winger being difficult. I don't know if they're true or not, but Kathleen Turner released a memoir in 2008 where she said that Deborah Winger lost the role when she bit Michael Douglas during a dinner the actor had organised to discuss the part.
Bit him. Okay. Like, leaned over or in retaliation. There's so much that isn't said there.
Sure. But that would fall under the category of difficult, I would say, and not a team player.
I think it's a sacking offence. Yeah.
So, Kathleen Turner had the role as long as she could prove to them that she could be dowdy.
I know, it's so funny. I read this thing where she's like, so you go in big clothes and no makeup, but she said, but it's still a struggle. It's like, because you are smoking hot always. This is the trouble. She's brilliant in this. It's just such a funny industry where she's like, look, I can also look like a normal person.
Well, the two films she'd done, I think she'd only done two films, And I want to do both of them in this podcast, Body Heat
yes.
and The Man with Two Brains. She is the same character in both films. Yeah, They're playing on it in the second film. So she is the sex pot. And so I guess people don't have the wherewithal in Hollywood to see that you can be more than one thing.
But they want everything, don't they? Because they're like, well, we need someone, quote marks, dowdy, but we don't want anyone actually dowdy because we want someone to go and see it. So you can't get a character actor in that way. You've got to get someone who's fit, but they want someone to like take off their glasses and be like, she's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, she's all that.
Yeah.
And so Danny DeVito, he famously lived with Michael Douglas in New York when they left uni. And he appeared in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which, of course, Michael Douglas produced. So they were best mates. And this is quite a sweet story he tells on the behind the scenes of this, that when Douglas got Streets of San Francisco and so moved to San Francisco to shoot that, he carried on paying his half of the rent on the apartment they had in New York.
That is a good friend thing to do.
Because Danny couldn't afford it.
That's great.
Danny kept asking him if there was a part for him in anything. Douglas sent him the script and said, Ralph is your part. And DeVito read it and he said it was even less in the original script. He said he was just a bloke peeking around a corner. He said, it ain't going to win me an Academy Award, but it might give me some exposure.
And also, like, you know, you keep asking me if there's something in here for you, and now I've been like forced to say yeah. Can't believe he's that choosy, but yeah, I suppose you've got to think of number one, haven't you?
Yep. And they expanded this character and the script on set, and I think some of what you see, like some of the bits I remember from childhood are the bits that Danny DeVito did on set, like falling off a table,
sure,
running down a hill, firing the gun behind your back.
Yeah.
That stuff was amazing because it's a cartoon character brought to life.
Yeah.
So it was not a pleasant shoot, though. Zemeckis says it was very, very tough. When the movie was over, I said to my agent who gave me the script, if another script ever comes across your desk that has a slug line in it that says exterior jungle, night, rain, never send it to me. Douglas said, it's funny what you said about him in this film. He said, one of those films that you love because it's so much fun and looks effortless, but it was tremendously difficult to make. And yeah, there's only about 20 minutes behind the scenes stuff, but it does look like they are having the worst time you can imagine.
Well, they're in a jungle.
They're in a jungle. Yes, which I have questions about Thursday's film.
Yeah. They're not in a jungle.
Yes, that's why I've got questions, because I read a couple of interviews and they were like, oh yeah, we're definitely in a jungle. That's
in a lot. In
okay.
LA. So
that's what that means. But the funny thing with Zemeckis is he said the guy who was the head of physical production at Fox at the time had it in for Romancing the Stone. While we were down in Mexico shooting, we found out later he was spewing all this vitriol about how we're out of control and this director doesn't know what he's doing. The cocoon producers, Zemeckis said, were hearing all of this stuff constantly coming out of Mexico. They got so nervous that they fired me.
You got fired from Cocoon as well.
Fired from Cocoon.
Nuts.
After he'd finished this film, but before it came out.
Yeah.
Yes, but it worked. I mean, from a first-time screenwriter, this dodgy director who couldn't make a hit, no stars in it, and it was in the top 10 in America for 11 weeks. It's one of those films that didn't open at number one, but just stuck around all summer because the word of mouth was great and people liked it. And after they saw the movie, Fox wanted to hire him back on Cocoon.
Yeah.
He said, I just sort of kind of politely declined.
What a gentleman.
And made back.
He'd be so tempted. Fuck you!
He politely declined and made Back to the Future.
God, it's so brilliant. It's just so brilliant.
Mm. So, that's my behind-the-scenes tale.
Lovely.
Should we get into the film?
Yes.
Okay. Cold open with a cowboy.
Yeah.
And some narration.
Yes.
We're allowing this narration, aren't we?
Oh, yes, we are. This
So it's Kathleen Turner as Joan Wilder narrating her own book, the final few scenes. It's silly romance, quite violent for romance, I would say.
I think back in the day it was. My granny was a big Mills and Boone fan.
Sure.
As a lot of people's grannies were.
Mm.
And I would occasionally flick through it. And there is this, God, I'm going to misquote, so I won't say the name, but there was a feeling around those novels around that time, sort of, but very old, that if someone was forceful, shall we say, that was super sexy.
Sure.
And I don't know if Mills and Boone is still like that. I don't know if it even still exists, to be honest. But, you know, people, the ideal sort of hero in some of those books would be someone that, you know, quote unquote, wouldn't take no for an answer sort of thing.
Mm.
And so, but they, you know, they sold like, you know, bananas, like people were going crazy for them. So, and I'm sure, I don't know, again, I haven't read one, but I'm sure it doesn't get too sort of criminal in the end. But the idea of a very powerful masculine figure was a big seller.
I was wondering how, I watched how accurate this was to the kind of novels they're talking about. and the time period, because I recently watched a really good documentary about Jackie Collins.
Oh, right.
It's fantastic. And about halfway through, she's on Wogan with Barbara Cartland.
You're right.
And Barbara Cartland goes at her.
Okay.
For basically writing porn and saying she's disgusting.
Right.
And she's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
And so I feel like maybe Joan Wilder's somewhere between Cartland and Collins.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, tastes change, don't they? Like, we, the naughty books when I was growing up was Jilly Cooper, and we couldn't believe how saucy they were. Mm. And they're
always,
quite clear.
Always about people riding horses.
Riding, just, it's just about riding horses. Yeah. Yeah.
And all that comes with that. And so this is Joan Wilder writing the end of her new novel and weeping as she finishes. We get a lot of character stuff here. A kitchen is filled with airplane bottles of booze.
It's, yes.
So is that a thing?
Is that, so I was, this is what I was saying at the top about this, this idea of the hot mess. So what's the thing with Kristen Bell? Was it called the... The woman in the girl in the window across from the woman in
sure.
the street thing.
So yeah,
that Netflix show.
I made it halfway through.
Yeah, but it parodied.
Exactly.
And I didn't see it, but I believe it did sort of run out of steam. But the idea of like this woman who's a sort of a shut-in, a recluse, she drinks, she whatever, her life is a mess.
Mm.
Where we are now is, yes, her life is a mess, but she's gorgeous. Her house is gorgeous. She does drink a lot, but it doesn't seem to affect her in any way. That's why the girl on the train was so good. But here, 84, your life is a mess. You haven't got any loo roll. And it's like, that is so much more relatable. Like, being a hot mess in that way doesn't just mean having a gorgeous bath. It means you've forgotten to buy toilet paper, which is just makes more sense. So I was like, yeah, yes, Joan Wilder, I totally understand this. But then the miniatures. I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, who has tons of miniatures? But is it because she travels? But it's not because she doesn't go anywhere. So does she? She will not commit to a full bottle of booze?
Maybe book tours. Maybe it's book tours.
I'm confused by it.
Yeah, no, I just wondered if anyone, if that was a thing that people did. I think I was given like maybe a box of miniatures once as a gift.
I would get you a box of miniatures as a gift.
But
yeah.
Other than that, they're not really a thing that people have, are they?
So you say that. Have you ever been to the Whiskey Exchange? There's one in London, but there's a few, one in Covent Garden. It's like pick and mix for grown-ups. Right. So it's just, you go in, it looks like fucking Hogwarts anyway. It's brilliant.
Right.
And they've got those ladders sliding back and forth. It's brilliant. But there's a lot of whiskey, but there's a lot of miniatures. And it is, you go and you're like, oh! And they're like, do you want a basket? Yeah. So you just fill up your basket full of really lovely miniatures. So
okay.
Do that.
I'm out of touch. But so the studio was very negative when executives saw the first cut of this film. And Zemeckis said, it wasn't really like we had a big screen or anything. It was just the main creative executive. We were just looking at it and realised we needed to shore up a lot of Kathleen's storyline. All that stuff at the beginning where she's generally in her apartment writing by herself, we went back and shot that stuff and it helped her character a lot. So this is the stuff that Diane Thomas came back and wrote. This was not in the script.
Right.
And it's important.
Yeah,
I guess
course.
You don't realise how important it is until you see it without
and
like
you
these
think
fixes.
About it not being there, yeah.
Yeah, she helps an old lady with her bags, aka saving
the cat.
And we get a lot of exposition from her agent in a scene that's basically a precursor to Sex in the City, I would say, isn't it?
Holland Taylor is very good.
Yep.
I think she's brilliant. I just like all of it. Yeah, like you say, I understand the Sex in the City, like being in the bar, like, but tastes have changed so much. Oh, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but when she's like, look at him, and it's like, blah!
Yeah, but that's like, that was 80s dude.
Yeah.
That was
true,
80s
but then,
dude.
Gloria. Is she called Gloria, the publisher? She's so gorgeous. It's just that those men are gross, but fine.
Yeah.
And the fact that Joan orders a grasshopper. So it's like, that's not a, you know, that drink, I don't know who's ordering that, but it's supposed to say she doesn't have a drinking problem, because if she had a drinking problem, she'd order a sensible drink rather than a grasshopper. So I get all of that. I think it's good.
Zolo, our villain, murders her janitor and ransacks her place in one of those scenes that sort of in a family film was very frightening as a kid to watch.
Yeah. An innocent man dies. Straight away.
Yeah.
Or we think he dies.
Yeah.
But it is scary.
I forgot to ask you, when did you first see this film?
I was about 8 in my family. It was that or The Jewel of the Night.
Sure,
but
you've
probably
said it.
We saw both.
Yeah.
So, but I remember whichever way around it was, my mum and dad loved this film. They were like, "Come on, kids, sit down and watch this film."
It must have been this one because the second one is bad. It gets. I mean, this isn't perfect, but it gets so much wrong what this one gets right.
Okay.
And she's such a damsel in distress in it. It's really it's disappointing.
It must have been this one then.
For me, this was just always on.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
That's
it was,
what Mark said. I was like, do you want to sit down and watch Romancing the Stone? And he's like, I've avoided this film more or less every week for my entire life. I was like, what are you talking about? It's like it's literally always on at Christmas.
Yeah, well, I'm more in the 80s, it felt like it was. Or maybe I recorded it the first time it was on in whatever, 86, and then I watched it all the time. But yeah, it was this or Raiders you'd stick on.
Yeah.
I've even got the 7-inch from the single, from the sequel.
Have you?
Yeah, you know what song came from the sequel?
No.
Billy Ocean, When the Going Gets Tough.
Oh, is it?
Yes, for this movie.
I can't remember that.
The three of them are in the video on stage with him dancing.
I have no memory of that.
Hell of a video.
Right. Okay. That's I'm learning.
So her sister Elaine is in Colombia. Her husband is dead and has been cut into bits and pieces. And he mailed her a package before he died.
Yeah.
This
why?
Is all very, you know, what? What?
Why though?
What?
Why your wife's sister that you haven't seen her, I think.
And then she gets kidnapped by a child who's working for Ralph and Ira, I think.
I think
so. Did they
so.
Kidnap her?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So it's a strange thing, Danny. Ira's Ira. He's not Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito's out. Ralph. He's kind of like a hero in some ways in the film, or he's a, not a hero, but he's like a character you root for, and yet... He's pretty bad.
He's bad. So you've got two antagonists or villains at this point because you've got Zolo and then you've got Ralph and Ira, who I assumed were all working together.
Yes.
And it's not until she gets on the wrong bus,
yes.
Joan does, and Ralph is like, oh no, that you realise that there's two separate villains.
Yes.
And so then the film works quite hard to make you sympathise for Danny DeVito.
Yeah, and to be fair, Ralph does say to Ira, we're not, you know, kidnapping is too much. We shouldn't be doing this. We've gone too far. So I suppose it does do something of a job. But when we meet them, they are feeding crocodiles, which is not a good look.
The snappers. Say it again, Ira.
Crocodiles? I wonder if they'll come back.
They're in this film so much.
So we learn that it was a treasure map that he sent to Joan. She's got to bring it to Cartagena in Colombia with Zolo in hot pursuit. She gets there, she boards the wrong bus, that bus crashes, and then the plot of the film is the engine is the fact that she took the wrong bus. She's just got to get from one place to another. And I don't really understand why Zolo stays on that bus with her for so long. Like, he's been
a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's a scary guy. He's just killed the janitor.
Yeah.
And all he needs to do is, in front of everyone, he doesn't care, is just pin her to the seat and say, give me your bag.
Yeah.
Job done.
The whole way.
It's like he's scared of her. He's not messing with Joel Wilder.
I'm going to sit on this bus for 8 hours going the wrong direction.
I will follow you for 8 hours.
Bloody Zolo. We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to meet Jack Colton.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. So Zolo reveals himself. He pulls a gun on Joan and then gets in a gunfight with Jack Colton.
And then later, you tell me, if I missed something, later on, Jack is like, oh, now you've got me shooting at the police. You're a nightmare, John. He doesn't say it. He's like, you're trouble, lady, or whatever the parlance of the time was. But he does shoot at Zolo here, like, a lot. So he's already in trouble. Or is it because he can't see him? He doesn't know who he is. Like, he's really cross with Joan later. He's like, you know.
He's firing at a man who's got a gun trained on a woman rather than knowing that it's the chief of the police.
Okay, fine.
Because Zolo's in. Who is Zolo? He's the chief of the secret police, but he's also Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and he's Indiana Jones.
Because Ralph literally says he searches for ancient antiquities.
Lost
Classic Zolo. So Jack saves her. As you say, we realise Zolo's a cop here. He gets in Ralph's car for some reason. I don't understand what's happening.
No.
Jack tells us who he is by saying to Joan, I ain't cheap, but I can be had. and we learn what Jack wants. He wants a boat and he's willing to help her for $375 in traveller's checks.
Great. That's good. Because you're like, oh, you're a bastard. But it's like, that's good. You have to be a bit of a bastard. Otherwise, none of this is going to work. So it is... It's weird, isn't it, later when she's like, you're not a gentleman, you took money. And it's like, yeah, fair enough, that is a bad thing to do. But you have to set these two people apart in order for them to come together. And the fact that he will take her money just even though she needs help is good.
It's what sets it apart from... It's what gives us conflict.
Yes.
And, and the point is, I guess I'd always thought, oh, this is Indiana Jones knockoff, but he's very much Han Solo here.
Yes.
Han Solo is the smuggler who does stuff for money and then falls in love. And so... it was interesting seeing that comparison. So, you know, there's some fun stuff between them. They've got great chemistry. He tosses a bag over a cliff.
Brilliant.
They both fall down a mudslide.
That's so scary.
Yeah, but when you're an eight-year-old boy, it looks like the most fun thing ever.
Yeah, that's true. But it, like, now as a grown-up, it's fun when they land at the bottom and they're like, woo, sort of thing. Or he's like that.
Because his head landed between her legs.
Oh, yeah,
that's
I hated
why
that, obviously.
Wahoo.
Yeah, I hated
did you?
That. Well, it's just, you know, it's undignified. She's been through enough.
We've got some funny Ralph stuff here. Calls Ira from the police station, falls off her desk. Classic DeVito. When you cast Danny DeVito, that's what you're going to get.
Yep.
He knows how to be funny.
To steal that scene from himself.
Jack chops the heels off her Italian shoes.
Great.
Good stuff. More rain. More chases, more bullets fired at them. A good line from him. Did you wake up today and say, I'm going to ruin a man's life?
All about him, though. Selfish.
Yeah, but that's who Jack Colton is. That's the journey he goes on
that's
in this
right,
film.
Yeah. He only thinks about himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
They end up on an edge of a cliff. He tells her to stand behind him.
Yeah.
She has other ideas.
Yeah.
Without him seeing, she starts trying the bridge. So I feel like this is the moment she transforms.
She's got an arc that gets going. It feels quite quick. Mm. Because normally, not normally, you could leave that moment of the crossing the bridge until right at the end.
Yep.
And it's brilliant that they stick it up front because she's changing and all the rest of it. I do argue about her timing in terms of having a small drink afterwards. I think that once you've crossed that bridge and nearly died, have your drink later. But fine.
How long a time limit is there on having a near-death experience and needing a top-up?
I didn't get to a place of safety.
Okay.
Although it is a miniature... Maybe that's why she drinks miniatures, because she's like, I need to do this on the go all the time.
But yeah, she's sort of transformed from helpless to hero. They escape further into the jungle where they find a dead pilot in a crashed drug plane.
God, I love that plane.
Do you?
It's got everything I need. Apart from the corpse, I don't need the corpse. Olives, booze and weed. Why would you ever leave? Even though there's a snake in there in a minute, which is not dreamy for me, I just thought it was just such a... Imagine stumbling upon that. I'd be like, well, we can turn this into a house with a bit of work.
We can die here.
That's what I was
live
saying.
And die here.
We clearly like each
other. You're hot, I'm hot. Let's do this.
We're fine.
It's funny. I don't think a modern film would have a dialogue scene this long. It's a really long.
That's true.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
It feels long to me now in a way that it might not have felt when I watched it the first time.
Yeah.
Just because, as you say, sort of taste change, style changes. But we learn a lot here. He finds the map, wants to find whatever's at the end of the map, wants to sail away all by himself. He sounds quite lonely. He becomes quite vulnerable here. He's talking about what he does for a living with the birds, and it's quite...
Yeah, he wanted to... What is it? I like shortcuts. I quite like that line.
Yeah, but it's sort of taken him down a peg or two, this sort of tough guy, but he's ended up smuggling birds.
Because he's stoned out of his mind, though, don't forget.
Is he?
Yeah, because that's what they set fire to.
Right.
So, and then he keeps... which I thought is really fun, and he keeps leaning into the fire... to this ginormous hot rock.
Yeah.
And then just like... But then I was like, you're in a cargo plane and I know that it's crashing, so there's obviously oxygen coming in, but you would be high as balls by this point, helplessly high. And she's like, I started to feel dizzy. And it's like, I can't believe you're both not just like a complete mess. Of course he's having a heart-to-heart because he's wasted.
Yeah, but this is her seeing his vulnerability for the first time and it's her seeing possibilities.
Yes.
She switches because it can't happen yet. So he says some stuff that annoys her and she calls him Mondo Dismo, telling him he isn't a real man and he's not honest or trustworthy. And then he saves her life by chopping off the head of a very long snake.
And then does he eat the snake? Because he keeps saying they're delicious. Next scene, I'm sure he's eating something, but she's got the olives. So well, you do the math. I think he's cooked and eaten the snake.
I've eaten snake.
He's roasted it over the weed. To give a nice flavour.
Yeah.
Have you? When?
When I was...
Last week?
No. When I was in the Outback. I went camping in the Outback for a couple of weeks.
Right.
In Australia.
And then what happened?
Ate some snake.
Did you catch it yourself?
No. I'm frightened of snakes.
Of course you are. Everybody is.
I'll eat a... I'm not frightened of spiders.
Even massive ones?
Yeah, not really. But a big snake, don't do my head in. And there are some big ones there.
Oh! And you were camping.
It was quite frightening.
And they can get in your tent. Have you not seen Crocodile Dundee? You're mad.
I accidentally stood on a giant one as well.
Oh!
Yeah, I thought it was a log.
Shut up.
So Joan passes out drunk. And the next day they're in a village filled with drug runners. The drug lord is a big Joan Wilder fan.
Yay.
And they're all Joan Wilder fans.
I do like that visual gag of his house on the outside. It's not shabby, but it's kind of rustic and there's goats in the yard and it's whatever falling down. He's like, oh, Joan Wilder, come in. And it's brilliant. It's lovely. He's got like, you know, fun furniture and he's got all mod cartons.
Yeah, he's got a little gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the beat as well. The beat is important. It's that she gets them out of trouble.
Yes.
Whereas Jack uses his strength. And these beats are very simplistic, but that's why they're so satisfying because you know what you're going to get. And when it happens, it's just that fun reverse and gives everyone, you know, female to male lead. You're just notching up the parity so that when the kiss does come, it's from a place of equality and that's all good.
And I think by this point, you've forgotten she is a romance author.
Yeah.
And so it's quite a surprise when, you know, you get that reveal, which is very funny. He drives them away in his Jeep. He avoids his favourite pig. He jumps over a river. They get to town and they both scrub up very nice.
Yeah.
I don't know who has nicer hair.
I think he does. Yeah, I think he nudges it.
Yeah, maybe so. Can we talk about the dancing?
Yeah, we can.
How do you feel? I am a heterosexual male. I don't understand what's happening when he's doing that.
What, with his hips?
Yeah, it doesn't look good to me.
It does. It looks like
Michael Douglas can't dance, is what I'm saying.
Oh, hang on. Now listen, I'm a very gifted dancer. No, I'm joking. I'm a very... If someone wants to try, because this is me, because I can't dance, but I will try.
I've danced with you.
Yeah, I know. So you know, I just like to try. And so once, if someone tries, that's good enough for me. Like, brilliant. I don't like people that are like, no, I won't do it.
Sure.
Because it's a killjoy. So I think it's of its time dancing. But when I see him, he's just committed. So
he is, 100%. That's adorable.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem sexy.
And she loves it.
Can't believe her eyes.
I know, that's the thing. And then he dips her and it's like, no.
It's sort of dad wedding dancing.
Yeah,
kind
and the
of,
trouble is
it?
I watched them the other way around. So once you've seen Channing Tatum dance in The Lost City, this scene is poorer by comparison.
Sure, but at least it's original.
Yeah.
No, and it's fun, and it's funny, but I just can't get over it. Like, so they kiss, they shag, And then we have another dialogue scene that really doesn't look comfortable with him lying exactly on top of her.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, he's a big man.
Get off.
I mean...
We're done.
How can you... What, she must be very uncomfortable there. And he's just lying flat. He's like... What do they call that? That challenge that people would do.
The plank.
The plank. He's planking on top of her. I'd be like, lie next to me and we'll have a cuddle. But why are you doing this?
Yes. Why are you doing this?
Well, I found a quote somewhere from Kathleen Turner, not in reference to this scene, but to other scenes. Stuff he was trying to make her do, Robert Zemeckis, saying how visually was a director, but he didn't really understand how people's bodies work. And so he said he was always trying to get her to stand in uncomfortable positions. And I guess what I'm thinking is like what the covers of those romance novels look like, where people are standing weirdly.
Okay, yeah.
And so she said that she kept him saying to him, I can't stand like that. That's not how a human being stands. And this is not how two human beings lie in bed together.
It's really
Let them have a chat.
Do you think he's got like, I don't know, like an elbow in a rib? Or, I don't know.
Yeah, why have you not?
Because who's got the core muscles on, you know, I'm talking from his perspective, to be planking for that long? Like, I don't know how long one can plank for. I can't plank at all. So, I don't know.
Well, I'm getting to the lack of six-pack in this movie, but I reckon he probably didn't have a six-pack at this time.
Okay.
Because there's a distinct lack of Douglas shirt-off action.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the only time you get a bit of Douglas side boob. So, he says he wants to help her sister.
Yeah.
And then he steals the map.
And then he puts it back.
Yeah, but he's taking it to photocopy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're back shagging, but he's lying.
But it's good because that's naughty.
Yeah, it's good. Makes it interesting. Again, more conflict.
The only issue I have with that is, I love it. I do love it. And I've always loved it because I remembered it from being younger. Later on, it's Danny DeVito who says, he's using you. He's a con man. He wants you to believe all this. Da, da, da. And how would he know that? Like,
because I think he knows Jack.
He just okay. So
yeah,
it's just
because
like his history.
I think they both operate on the same country.
Oh, I see.
As the sort of Americans who are, you know, a bit dodge.
Okay, fair enough.
So yes, I'll get to that line. He says he's a con man trying to romance the stone out from under you.
Yeah.
That is saying the title of the film in quite a clumsy way.
It is a bit, yeah. kind of romance a stone.
Yeah, I've never liked the title of this film. It's always driven me up the wall.
Because the trouble is, nowadays you do Romancing the Stone, Meet Joan Stone. That would be the thing. So obviously, let's not call her Joan. But that's what it would be. It's always, I don't know. And then sometimes you think stone, you think ghoul stones, bladder stones.
It just, Romancing the Stone doesn't mean anything to me.
No.
I guess he's trying to give it context. But anyway, they find some milky water thereafter, find the gem inside a small statue, and it's a huge green diamond.
How did that gem get inside that bunny? Because the gem is as big as the bunny.
Yeah, but it's definitely inside it, so it must have got in there somehow.
So it's like traffic, you know, when they've got these at the gnomes, but they're made of cocaine or whatever. So maybe it's like that, like they sort of grew it, moulded it around the gem, and then it hardened in some way.
It's probably like a Russian doll, the statue.
Right,
they just
yes.
put two sides of it together, but we can't see that.
Thank you.
It's movie magic, Vicky.
That was really bothering me, because I was like, have they poured it in there?
Yeah, but they did get it in. Okay, anyway. Ralph appears and pulls a gun on them, and then he says, move it before Batman gets home.
Yeah.
Which I like, because he's the Penguin.
Yeah, yeah.
not yet, but he will be. Ralph points out that Jack's the con man, and then they run and they drive and they get the stone back and they end up driving down a river. It's quite funny, her steering the car mm-hmm. on the river. That's not going to have any effect. and then they throw themselves out of the car and off the waterfall in a very impressive stunt.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
They did do their own stunts, didn't they?
I mean, they always say that, but they won't have done that stunt.
No, that's crazy.
No. But what was impressive in this film, there's a couple of massive stunts, and I like with Vine over the ravine.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I mean, that's definitely not Kathleen Turner.
Yeah.
But you can't see the joins. The stunt people are doing an amazing job there, making us think it is them. So they end up on opposite sides of the river, her with the map, him with the stone, and they agree to meet, or he suggests meeting at the Hotel Cartagena.
Yeah.
And I think the film has done enough to this point to to make you doubt him enough?
I
mean,
was
you don't.
I was going to ask you that because you, I didn't.
No, you don't.
But do you want to? Like, would you? It's such a tricky one. Mm. I don't believe he would let her down. So all I'm waiting for is exactly at which point will he turn up? And also, it doesn't, you know, what matters is what does she believe? And she's not sure. But I wondered if it would be even more interesting if as a viewer, you were like, I really don't know if he's going to do it or not.
Yeah.
I just, but then I don't know, because we're so far into it. We're sort of really getting, we're nearly at act three. If you really thought that, you'd be like, God, I've spent, an hour and a half with you and you're still a bastard. So I don't know.
Yeah, that is interesting. That could be my change. Thank you. So she sent to a mysterious location to exchange the map for Elaine. The handover happens and then Jack appears. He's a prisoner of the police and they're all taken prisoner now. They cut Joan's hand and feed her blood to the crocodiles.
Yeah.
Turns out the gem is in Jack's pants.
Does he shake it out of his arsehole? What happens? He's like, hang on a minute. And it shimmies down his leg. From where did it come?
In his pants.
In his pants.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think you're
fine.
Supposed to think. I mean, it's still not ideal.
He just makes a really uncomfortable face.
In front pocket. So that wouldn't work for me because I wear boxers. He's got to be wearing wide fronts.
So it slid into that.
Slid
pit.
In the side. A third bollock, effectively.
A really valuable third
a
bollock.
A big, sharp, green bollock.
You'd be so chuffed.
And he drops it down his trouser leg, kicks it towards the water. Zolo catches it and the crocodile bites off his hand. I was a kid. We were all kids.
But it all goes a bit fucking crazy here. Like, Michael Douglas gets a machine gun. I blinked. I was like, where did he get a machine gun from? And then someone's lost their hand. You're like, you idiot. Like, obviously it's bitten your hand off. Doesn't Elaine... Doesn't John set someone on fire? Like, yeah. It just really kicks off.
Yeah, it's the 80s.
Yeah.
It's the 80s. Kids, the kids will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but this is one of those... I've written a couple of lists of stuff that messed up kids of the 80s, the movie moments, and I'd forgotten this one, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, wow, this was one of those moments I was dreading when you're watching the film.
Yeah.
Pete, can I forward wind this bit? Please, bro. Joan throws the knife at Zolo, but he blocks it. She's in real danger when Jack's wrestling the crocodile, and so he's got this decision to make. Does he let go of the crocodile that's eaten the gem and save Joan, or does he go after the treasure? Of course, he does the right thing. He goes after Joan. He turns into Spider-Man.
Literal Spider-Man. There's no purchase on that wall. I might not say, oh, he's Spider-Man now. There's not even a ledge. And he's like, bup, 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 we go. Like, it's crackers.
Mm. But impressive.
But he does it. It's fine.
And at the same time, while he's climbing the wall, Joan burns Zolo, as you said. Then she sets fire to him and he falls into the crocodile pit.
Pit, yes.
And so it's great. She didn't need him.
Yeah.
And so that's really good writing.
Yeah.
Because he could have come and helped and teamed up with her. Michael Douglas, as producer, his ego might have said, I want to help save her.
That's a good point.
But what we end up with is Joan saving herself. And not only that, but he says to her, you're going to be all right, Joan Wilder. It's telling us she's got her independence. We've seen it, but it's nice to have a character sort of back it up. He kisses her and then says, you always were.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It's good.
And then he dives into the water. Yeah,
bye.
And it's so cool.
I'm going to leave you now.
It's very, very cool.
It's so not to be too much this person, but this is what would change. You don't need your man to tell her. You can't speak to yourself or for yourself in that way. You can't go, I'm going to be all right now, because that's bad. So it's difficult. Do you make another female character do it? I don't know. It's of its time in that the man that you are interested in has reinforced what you already know, but you might do it differently these days.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I totally see where you're coming from, but I was thinking as well, if I tried to do this, I would definitely belly flop into the water.
You'd ruin it all.
I would have got it all right up to that point.
And then, bang! Everyone's like, ha!
And then Joan's like, are you all right? Yeah, I'm all right.
I meant to do it. It's just different. It's just different style of diving. That's all it is.
So we cut back to her in New York and the publisher loves her book. But she's still hopeful that Joan will find romance.
I mean, I think this is where Lost City actually has it better, because Gloria always liked Joan's books. So the change there is like, oh, this one's going to be huge. But she was like, the one I got in the restaurant when you ordered that grasshopper, that one was going to be huge. So nothing is any different. But it's like Gloria's really concerned for John's love life. So that's enough. But I was like, oh, you were always a good writer and now you've written something even better. Fine, but not as fine as you're on the slide, John, you need to sort yourself out. And then she turns in this manuscript.
Yeah. No, yeah, that would have been a change. But then she leaves the restaurant and sees a boat in the street.
What a cocky little man he is.
Jack appears in his crocodile boots.
He's dragged a sailboat through Manhattan. It's ridiculous.
Says he couldn't stop thinking about her. He's even read one of her books.
Yeah. And also, I don't think the crocodile boots thing has aged that well. That, again, of its time and real animal products, it was a different world. But when he's like, yeah, I killed that croc and now I'm wearing it. And you're like, oh, this is a crocodile, like, doing his business. Like, don't turn it into boots.
He's a man-eating crocodile.
That's true.
He just ate a hand.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry. When that happens, they've got to be put down.
Yeah, and also, I found out that they can run faster than you can on land.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they are.
But just not for very long.
Right.
They're monsters.
They are. Kill them all.
Get rid of all of them.
Turn them all into cowboy boots. And so they kiss and then they drive/sail down an empty New York street.
Yeah.
Which was just such a stark image. Again, and because it played over the end credits, it sort of lasts for ages. And I can just remember watching that thinking, why?
There's no one in New York.
Yeah, what's New York like? Yeah.
Who's let him drag a boat down the street anyway? But it's, oh, no, don't worry about it, Jack. There's no one here.
Now
you're
fine. What a logistical nightmare.
Oh, my God, yeah. Imagine that, like, getting the street clear for even a second. Yeah, amazing.
And that's your happy ending.
Yay!
So, as I said, it was followed by a sequel that made about as much money. Cost a bit more money. I remember, I've not written this down, there was some drama, though. Kathleen Turner did not want to do it, and they threatened to sue her for $25 million.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What,
she signed on to say she would, so...
She signed the contract at the beginning, then, so Douglas had to smooth it over, and as I say, she's the one that said, well, Diane Thomas has to write some of this. I think she was annoyed that Diane Thomas wasn't going to write it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Zemeckis had left as well, and so it was all these... The moving parts had all disappeared.
Yeah,
so.
It seems like a cash grab.
But, yeah, I just think the second one is a bit of a mess. I liked it all right when I was a kid, and then I watched it again about 20 years ago, and I thought, oh, this is terrible.
Well, I'm probably not going to watch it now.
Nah.
Again.
I don't think so.
Although I have seen it.
I don't think you need to. Oh. And so that's that. So let's do the bits and bobs.
Lovely.
Vicky, what is your favourite scene?
So I really like the mudslide bit. I think I like the energy. It does look scary to me. Like you say, when you were a child, that's fun. But I'm just very taken with the cargo plane scene as a grown-up now.
You are, aren't you?
All my basic needs are met in that scene and in that plane. So I like the fact that we've got a heart-to-heart moment. It moves the relationship along. But I was just jealous of that cargo plane. I was like, that looks like a great camping holiday.
Yep. Would you want to do it with Michael Douglas?
I think Like, I don't have that thing of... Because I'm slightly too young for it, where I was like, he is the fittest thing, like, on two legs for a while. But... I mean, the man's got charisma, sure.
He has, isn't he?
Yeah.
He'd be good company.
Yeah, exactly. A fun... I would like to drink a full bottle of tequila with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got some stories. I like it when the drug lord Juan recognises Joan and is a big fan of her work.
I
just think that's a really... It's a really perfectly timed joke.
Yes.
Most valuable whatever... Vicky.
So I do want to give Holland Taylor a shout out because she's excellent. And then it would be Kathleen Turner because of her portrayal of that, you know, this I'm a mess because I drink and I stay in thing, you know, when we talked about the parody of that. It is such a tired trope that, you know, you're a mess but you're not actually a real human being mess. But Kathleen Turner makes you believe in Joan as a fully rounded person who may be having some issues around getting out there and enjoying life and all the rest of it. She feels like a real person in the way that when other people do that, I'm a mess kind of thing. It just doesn't feel real at all. It just feels annoying. And it is relatable and you very much root for it. But let's give it to Diane Thomas for creating that and for putting on those scenes that made that a thing in the first place. Kathleen Turner is really brilliant in this, but it's a sort of, you know, it must be in the writing also.
Yeah, and the fact that she did write it before Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
This was a big swing, really, because it's combining the old adventure serials with the sort of screwball comedy.
Yes.
It Happened One Night kind of thing.
Which
Raiders does a little bit, and the other indies do, but this leans into that more. And that's a really... that was a really unusual approach for the time.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. So yeah, my winner is also Diane Thomas. But I also want to give a shout out to the writer of the novelisation.
Right, yeah, of course you do.
Do you know who wrote the novelisation of this?
Was it Hilary Mantel?
No.
Was it Stephen King?
No, it's a good joke what they did.
Okay. Oh, was it Joan Wilder?
It was.
Yay!
Yeah, and Jurel the Nile novelisation by Joan Wilder.
Brilliant.
They did. I don't know. I don't even know who the real writer was, but
it was Stephen King.
And what would you change if you could change anything?
So first of all, I just want to say this. It's not because, and I feel unconfident to say it, so I've got an actual change. I don't like the colour palette. I think it's too muted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's because I'd watched a very lush, sparkly version of this story in The Lost City first, but it just seemed
purple.
a bit dowdy. But anyway, here we are. This is my change. So at the end, Elaine, the sister, she was in it all along somehow, right? And her sister has gone to all this trouble, but Elaine has double-crossed her. She's double-crossed Joan. But Joan has lived in the shadow of Elaine for far too long. And so Joan wins the day while still leaving the door open for Elaine to have redemption, because sisters, and we don't want to like throw a sister under the bus. But I just like the idea that she's been forced into this adventure out of a sense of like sister sort of loyalty, but actually Elaine's been stringing her along, and it's very convoluted, but somehow the map went to her rather than her, and so she's just forced her little dowdy sister to do this thing, and then Joan emerges like a beautiful butterfly to win the day, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not less. I can't believe I've just said that out loud, because that's pitting women against each other, which I'm not meant to be a big fan
no,
of.
No, do it. Do it.
But it would be fun, wouldn't
it's
it?
It's important.
For balance.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's a great change. Mine is a less story focused than that. Cast Clint Eastwood as the cowboy at the start, in the way that we got Channing Tatum in the other film. But also, it's what I said. I feel like we need to really objectify Michael Douglas in this movie.
Fine.
I want to see him. I want to see his ass.
I want to see all of it.
I want to see his
stomach.
The thing
is, you should contractually almost see his ass, because he's in the jungle. So it's like, where are you going to wash?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always a scene. It's like, I found a river. And then you get to see someone's bum.
Yeah.
You get to see a lot of Channing Tatum's bum in The Lost City. So I don't know. I think yeah. you're fair. I think it's fair enough, Chris.
Yeah. And maybe it's because I watched The Lost City yeah. after this that I thought,
you were like, where is his
yeah,
ass?
Yeah. Where is his ass? Michael Douglas's ass, and that ends Romancing the Stone.
Lovely stuff.
So no quiz this week, as it's just the two of us. So let's look to next week. And the clue from Alex is Into the Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse. He did put a question at the end of it, because I don't think he was
into
sure.
Into the Spider-Verse?
So that's your lot. If you want to watch us, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, and we're even on YouTube now. Have you seen us on YouTube, Vicky?
No, I was unaware. I saw the messages, but I'm unaware yeah. of what this means. So what is it, just the show on YouTube?
No, it's an edited version of the show.
Oh, nice.
It's much shorter, about half an hour, the episodes I saw,
okay.
With some clips thrown in.
Nice.
It's great. Last I looked, Days of Thunder and Top Gun are up there, as well as No Retreat, No Surrender.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Which I did find myself watching some of, just for Alex's reaction to No Retreat, No Surrender.
I didn't watch that on purpose, but I might do one day.
No, you don't have to. So, yeah, just search for Clash Pod in those places. Well, if you liked what you heard, please give us a review or a rating, or better still, download each episode twice. And that really is your lot. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday with The Lost City.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.